Om is a very special sound, you know. The scriptures say, the Upanishad says, that if you take a needle and pass it through every single scripture, this Om is that needle. That's how powerful and potent it is. So when you chant this Om, you need to chant it with that faith. And, you know, and of course it goes A-U-M, not O-M, as you know, right? Om. It's the mantra of mantras. A mantra is that thing which helps you transcend the mind. Manano iti trayate, that's what mantra is. So, Om is that which is the king of mantras. Just imagine how much power it has. If you look at every single thing that we do, it starts with Om. Every single mantra that we do, every single ritual that we do starts with Om.
Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavid Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
By the way, this first thing that I chanted, it's telling you, when I said Om, I already made a phone call to God. Om. And it's asking the Lord to bless us both so that you, your mind is available for me to talk. And my mind is available for you to right? So either way, so it brings about a rapport between the speaker and the audience. Okay, and that's what this prayer is in the beginning. Right, and then it has three shantis, and you know the reason for the three shantis is because there are three. They say there are three types of disturbances that come to you when you are in meditation or when you are quiet. One is disturbances that come from, I wouldn't call it godly, but I would say earthquakes and hurricanes and things like that can just happen, or anything from the outside world, any noise from the outside world, or if these sages were sitting on the tops, on the outsides, on the mountains and all that, you know, bitten by some insects and stuff like that. All this outer disturbance. And then the third is the disturbance from your own mind inside. So that's why there are three shantis. That's why we say, shanti, shanti, shanti. Going from the gross to the subtle. The gross is the most, is the disturbance from the outside, like earthquakes, hurricanes, everything else. The next one is things from just normal disturbances outside. And the third thing is from your own mind. So it grows from the gross to the subtle, right? And that's why the Om also starts off loud, in the middle, and then soft, right? Okay. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I'm going to chant something so that your minds are peaceful, which I did yesterday.
Om Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala. Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala Shiva. Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala Shiva, Arunachala, Arunachala, Arunachala. बोलो श्री सद्गुरुनाथ महाराज की जय। ओम श्री गणेशाय नमः। ओम सरस्वत्यै नमः। ओम श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। ओम समस्त जन कल्याणे निरतम करुणामयम् नमामि चिन्मयम् देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्म विद्वरम्। ओके, सो टुडे आवर टॉपिक इज इट्स कॉल्ड द ग्लोरी ऑफ द प्रणव मंत्र। प्रणव मीन्स द ओम। दिस इज द रियल Sanskrit name, that what it's called. A-U-M is nothing, it's also called Pranava, P-R-A-N-A-V-A, and I'll explain how all that comes about. So it's a Sanskrit word which means controller of the life force in you, and that controller of the life force is called prana. Prana is all the systems in your body, you know, just like your systems run your computer, so too the digestive, circulatory, respiratory, reproductory, and what did I miss? Excretory system. All these five systems run your body. But that which makes all this run is the self. Right? So, but therefore, this prana represents one of those. It represents all these five systems. Okay? So, when you chant that, it picks up on the life, on that part of it. Okay? And you're penetrating deep into yourself when you chant this word, okay, Chimana. And the sound of Om reverberates in and through our scriptures and is one of the most powerful mantras that you can ever think about. And as I told you, mantra comes from the Sanskrit word. It says mananat trayate iti mantraha. That means that which enables you to transcend your mind is called mantra. See, you wonder, what's this word? Mantra, mantra, mantra. It's all over the place, right? It's like a buzzword. But that's what it means. It means that which helps you transcend your mind, okay? So, A-U-M, Om, is the essence of any mantra. Because if you look at, as I told you, anything that you do, whether it's ritualistic or anything like that, even what we chant, we start with Om, see? Everything starts with Om. And that should tell you how useful it is. So, when I say Ganesha's name or Sri Krishna's name, anything or any one of these names, when I do the Gayatri Mantra, all these different things, when I do Vishnu Sahasranam, all these things have Om, yes.
You know, when you greet people, you use the word Om, Hari Om.
Hari Om.
You use it secondly.
Sorry?
You say it secondarily.
Oh Hari Om. No, that is also saying that I recognize that Om that is within you. That's a greeting.
So you've got to
greet
first.
Yes. But it's telling you I recognize the Lord within you. That's what Hari Om means. Okay, correct me, you're right. But still a primary mantra. Okay. Yeah. Hari Om is something that we put in, it's like a greeting. But it's not like a mantra. Hari Om is like a greeting. Yeah. It's like it's like saying hello, hello, hello. But this has more meaning than hello. That's the difference. Okay? But here, so mantra is something which is totally different from that. Hari Om can be a mantra because the Om is there. See? But Om primarily comes first, as I was telling you. Now, Om is how you invoke God. You know, I was telling you, just like you make a telephone call to somebody, hello, hello, hello. What is the telephone call to God? Om. The moment you saw Om, he has it. He has your attention. And now you tell him what you want.
See, and the rishis were the great sages of our past. Their minds were like pure antennas. And you know, when you have an antenna, it picks up everything. It picks up all the electromagnetic vibrations. Okay? When you have your TV antenna and it's perfectly tuned to the station, then it comes in. Okay? When you put in that correct channel, it comes in. When you have your radio and it's tuned correctly to that AM or FM station, that comes in. But if it goes off, then it's off tune and there's a lot of static, stuff like that. These rishis' minds were like pure antennas. So it was tuned to station Om. Okay? And when you tune to station Om, you pick up all the spiritual vibrations. And they picked it up. Why? Because their mind was perfectly pure. No judgmental issues. No likes and dislikes. Nothing. They had none of those things. That's what's called a pure mind. Like a Sri Rama would have, like a Christ would have, like a Buddha would have. All these are pure minds. That's the reason why we call them God. Because the infinite, which is so powerful, when it manifests in a person, that person is literally God. Okay? Because it's the complete manifestation of that. And the beauty is that these sages, when this message came through them, they passed it on without any distortion because their minds were pure. There's nothing there to filter it out, and there's nothing that filtered it in when it came in. So the message that came in went out. So you can rely on that. You know, if you look at the last issue that we had when Swami Swarupananda went, I wrote an article on GPS. You should read it. GPS is what we use to take us here. But GPS is also called Guru Parampara System. That is the disciplic succession from our sages all the way up to here. So all that takes you into, helps you, you know, do everything in the world, like from Gurudev and onwards. So they said in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Okay. Now I say, considering sanctity and power of the Pranava Mantra, we could surmise that word was Om, A-U-M. Sri Krishna in the Gita extols this Om Mantra. And what does he say? He says that Om Mantra has the power to take you back to your source. If that is the last remembrance before you leave the physical body, it will take you back to your source. Just imagine that. Yeah? And this powerful words of Sri Krishna in the Gita force us to inquire into the meaning of this. If that is the case, my goodness, I want to know all about it. You know, that's what you want to say, right? So this is what we are doing. So what is that sloka in the Gita? It says, Om it ekaksharam brahma vyaharan mam anusmaran. So Om iti eka aksharam brahma. That means uttering the monosyllable Om, Om. Okay. Brahma vyaharan. It represents Brahman. That means the supreme. Mam anusmaran. Remembering me, if you utter that symbol Om, Om. Ya prayati tyajan deham, whoever goes forth leaving this body, sayati paramam gatim, proceeds to the highest goal. See, that's what it means. Okay? So this is a Sanskrit thing from the Gita. I just told you the meanings. Okay? If you want to look it up, you can look it up. Gita chapter 8, verse 13. So it is chanted, Om ekaksharam brahma, vyaharan mam anusmaran yaprayati tyajan deham sayati paramam gatim. That's how you chant it. Okay? But this is what it means. That if you chant that mantra just before you leave, it means you're looking at the source. Now, so uttering this monosyllable Om, representing Brahman, remembering me, whosoever goes forth leaving this body, he proceeds to the highest goal. Therefore, you want to understand what this Om means. So let's try to understand it. Let us understand it in spirit. What that Om, we call it Omkar. Om is the Omkar, we call it. So we want to understand what it means. Find out where and how we can seek it. And in gradual and determined steps, move towards that Om, single-pointedly. These are the things we want to do. And then we want to persist in seeking. And when obstacles arise, we seek help from the ones who have realized the truth, self-realized masters. Well, and so we can use this as a contemplation and meditation tool. I'll explain all that, how you can use it as a beautiful contemplation tool. So let us proceed systematically to understanding this, okay? So the following things, understanding and seeking this Om. What are the first things? First of all, what I already told you about Sri Krishna's message. Second thing, we can understand this through the scriptures and through masters. Third thing, all the mantras that I told you, anything that you do, any offering that you do in a puja or you do in any ritual, all starts with an Om. And then we'll look at the symbolic comprehension of that symbol. You see how powerful even the symbolic thing is, okay? And then we'll take the Shiva Panchakshara mantra and we'll see how that connects up with the Om. We'll look at another thing called Dakshinamurti Dhyana Shlokam. That's another text. It's a Vedanta text. That also we'll see how it points to the Om. And keeping the mindset on this Om, how do you keep your mindset on this? And look at that world compared to the world of names and forms. Because understand, this Om is that which is beyond name and beyond form. But it is that which is responsible for the name and the form. It is beyond everything else. Yes, it is. It is. Yet you cannot have the name and form without it. See, that's the power of it. You know, that's called the spirit. Okay, as you know that. So. Okay, so and then we understand from the Mandukya Upanishad, what is the meaning of Om? See, how many of these great texts, Vedantic texts, focus on the Om? That means it must be something really, really profound. And it is, as you'll see. Symbolism from the Mundaka Upanishad. There's another Upanishad called Mundaka Upanishad. I told you Mandukya Upanishad. Mandukya has it and Mundaka also has it. Look at all these texts. There's another text called Amrita Bindu Upanishad. That also has it. There's another one called Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. That also has it. You can imagine I'm telling you all this because that is how sacred this mantra is. Okay? And the Gayatri Mantra, which we're going to talk about 2-3 days from now, on the Thursday, that also has the Om in it. The Buddhist mantra, Om Mani Padme Om, has Om in it. Om Mani Padme Hum, that has Om in it. See? So, and then what the great Mahatma say about Om? Then how do we follow this whole thing? Okay, so let us start this. So by understanding glory of greatness of Omkar through all these Upanishads that I told you about, the Bhagavad Gita and the Gayatri Mantra, other scriptures, we will see how great it is. So let us understand Om. That understand Om is the comprehensive, universal, holy sound symbol, and it signifies the supreme infinite reality. Okay, now you see if you look at what is the meaning of this Om actually? If you look at it, pranava in Sanskrit means humming. Okay, it's a humming sound. Yeah, so hum. You know, so it says that this sound can be heard as the sound of one's own nervous system. If you meditate deeply, you can hear it within the Om. And it's saying it's like an electric, it's like a sound made by an electric transformer. Or a swarm of bees or 1,000 veenas playing in the distance. Just imagine, huh, all this. And the meditator, what does the meditator do? He's taught to inwardly transform the sound into the inner light that he is. You see, you know there are things that transform sound into light. They can transform, you can do the other way. You can transform a mechanical motion to a sound. For example, an accordion or a harmonium works on that principle. Right? So to hear, the sound principle is transferred to light. And you know that very well because that is the purpose of all meditation. When you start with meditation, you have to start with the mantra and then slowly move on and go into the silence. And the silence takes you to that light, the light of consciousness. Isn't it? So that's how we move there, okay? Now, Gurudev said, the river Ganga is the river of eternal pranava, eternal Om. She is the sound of endless chanting of Om arising from a million mouths in unison. Imagine, just look at this Gurudev's words. To be immersed in God's beauty in nature is to be nearest one's own Swarupa. That is what Swami Tapovan Maharaj, his guru, said. And then you have to consider yourself, I am the pure consciousness which makes me aware of all these experiences. See, that's ultimately what happens here. The same power, you know, if you look at the scriptures, It says that Lord Shiva, there was a story there where all these soldiers went and disturbed a sage in meditation. And when they disturbed in meditation, you know, he was suddenly disturbed. So he opened his eyes and all of these sages were reduced to ash. Because that's the power of a sage's meditation. You know, our Gurudev used to say, whenever he was giving a talk and he was able to raise the level of the consciousness of all the people to a certain level, and somebody walks in, he would stop and he would say, wait for him to sit down. Can I start now? That's what he would say. May I start? You know what he said? He said, that is a mahapapa. That means a great sin to disturb this, because I brought these minds up to such a high level and you come here and disturbed all this. It is such a great... It's not a nice thing to do. It's not only disturbance, but you brought that mind to such a level. You know, he used to say that I can, you know, if you stay with me and if you follow my lead and if you tune into my mind, I can take you, I can do both the things for you. One is Shravanam, means listening to the teacher. Mananam means reflecting on the words of the teacher. He's saying, I can do the Shravanam and Mananam for you together. What kind of a thing? Look at that. Usually if you have to do the reflection yourself. But he's saying that if you listen to me and you tune your mind to mine, then I can bring you to both those right away. That's what he used to say. Just imagine. Okay, so what I was saying was, these 60,000 soldiers, they came to this and they stood and they all got turned to ash. And then the king was so bothered, my goodness, all my soldiers are like this, what should I do? And he approached the sage. He said, what can I do? You know, that's what happened. So he said, okay, what can I do? He said, you have to bring the Ganga down, the Ganges water down. You have to bring it down from the heavens. And Lord Vishnu is the one who, from whom the water comes. And he says that Vishnu will come and then it has to fall on Lord Shiva's head and then fall down. So that's why Lord Shiva is there, and he took the brunt of the Ganga river on his head. And because it was so powerful, he also made a little knot in there so that it trickles down. And even that trickle is so powerful. Just imagine. And that trickle, that Ganga river is so pure that is the one that purified purified the ashes of all those ancestors, because they made such a big mistake by disturbing a sage in meditation. So this is just a little story. Okay, so this pranava, okay, now, it is also called Bija Mantra. Bija means seed. It's a very essence. It's like a seed and a sprout. The tree or the sprout, anything cannot come without the seed. So this is like a seed mantra. It's most important. And here, we do not create Om by chanting, but we produce a vibration sympathetic with that vibration that is already there by its own right, which is called Om. See, you're just synchronizing. You know, you heard of that in physics. There's a resonance. Resonance occurs when your natural frequency is equal to the frequency of that thing that through which you're talking. Right. For example, resonance occurs when two things vibrate in the same frequency, and you've seen all those experiments with sound, and you know, you see those nodes in that. It's called Kunz tube. I know it's old stuff. Yes, all my people who were in high school know that. Okay, so this idea, this is a cosmic vibration and is chant. So why do we chant Om? Now let's look at that drawing. Okay. Look at this. This is the symbolic form of Om. Understand, you see there are three. There's one loop here, another one here, and a third one here. And there is this crescent and the dot. What do these mean? This part of the Om represents the waking state. This part of the Om represents the dreamer. This part represents the deep sleep state. And this part represents Maya. Maya is that which comes between you and the self. That is the one that deludes you into thinking of yourself as this physical body. That's called Maya. And you notice this little dot is the real you. That little dot is called Bindu, B-I-N-D-U, sorry. So we need to focus on that bindu. See, that bindu is also symbolic of the third eye that you have. Lord Shiva's third eye is same thing as our third eye, the same thing, okay? Now what is the meaning of this third eye? Third eye means is the eye of knowledge. Yeah? When I look through these with these two physical eyes, I can make mistakes because I base everything upon the fact that I am this physical body, this mind intellect. So all my conclusions are based on that premise, which is wrong. Right? Therefore, the moment I revert to this eye, then you'll see that all this thing opens up. You know, Christ, in the book of Matthew, it says, when thine eye be single, thy body shall be full of light. Same thing. Our master said it so many years after that. Huh? What is the meaning of that? That means when these two eyes, when you don't see through these eyes and you see through the single eye, then you will realize that you're the light. When thine eye be single, thy body shall be full of light. See? What an amazing thing. All these masters are great in their own way. Okay, so you see, so this is the waker, dreamer, and the deep sleeper. And this is the Maya, this is the thing that comes in between you and that. Okay, now, this fourth state, which is that little dot there, is also called Turiya, T-U-R-I-Y-A, Turiya. It's the fourth state, okay? And Maya is also the ego, okay? Understand, okay? Now, let us go to the next thing. There is a mantra here. It's called Shiva Panchakshari Mantra. Okay? So let me chant that and I'll show you the meaning. I'll tell you the meaning. Omkaram Bindu Samyuktam Nityam Dhyayanti Yoginah Kamadam Mokshadam Chaiva Omkaraya Namo Namaha. There are a number of verses of this, but there is one verse that we need to remember. Omkara Bindu Samyuktam. That Om, which is united with the Self. That Om, this whole Om, which is united with that Self. Omkara Bindu Samyuktam. What happens to that? Nityam Dhyayanti Yoginah. All the yogis meditate upon that. And what does it do? Kamadam Mokshadam Cha Eva. It grants you the desires and also moksha. That means it grants you liberation as well. Omkaraya. So I worship Omkaraya Namo Namaha. That means I worship that Omkar, that Om, which is responsible for this, which great yogis meditate upon. They meditate upon this, which is their divine self. And what does this whole thing do? Because they meditate upon this and their attention is totally on this. Although they are composed of all these, they also have a physical body, everything else. But they transcend all this and go straight to that. But you and I, we still have that. But we should also transcend and move in that direction. And that's the process of meditation. It's to transcend all these three. The waking, dream, deep sleep. Right? You know about that because the waking, dream, deep sleep are just states that we go through as a physical body, mind, intellect, the gross body, subtle body, causal body, all these things go through these states, right? Okay, so it says, I salute that Omkar, which is representing the symbol Om, which is united with the source, which is that little dot, okay, on which yogis always dwell, which grants all desires and liberation. Okay, now, note one thing. See, you know, Gurudev used a very beautiful word. He said, relationless relationship. What a beautiful word. Can you imagine that? It is talking about the Atman. It's talking about the soul, or about the Supreme Soul, Om. It is saying that although it seems related, it is totally unrelated. Why is that? Because it's like the ocean and the waves. The waves are there. The waves cannot stay without the ocean. Water is needed. The waves are made up of water. So if you take away the ocean, the waves cannot exist. Right? So, the waves are depending upon that. But the ocean doesn't care whether there are waves or not. It doesn't care. It didn't say, waves, come on, come into me. No. It can stay calm, it can stay this thing, but the waves decided to be there. So, whose fault is it? See, just like that, what we feel, all the perturbations that we feel are waves. But our real self is calm within. Okay? And that calmness is what we are talking about. The calmness is this. So the relationship is the fact that although this is there, this has everything to do with all this. Yet, it does not need any of these waking, dream, deep sleep, or anything for it to exist. That means you by yourself, the real you, is nothing but that. But unfortunately, because you had a body, mind, intellect, and all this, you got all these things here. Huh? So you assume the status of a waker, dreamer, and deep sleeper. Who told us to do that? It's not the Om's fault. It's not the Supreme Brahman's fault. It is our fault because the mind went like that. But now it doesn't matter. You know, as I was telling you yesterday, when you have a fire, when your house is on fire, you don't stand there and say, oh, how did it catch fire? Let me put it out. You don't say, how did it catch fire? You go and put it out. So to here, you put out this fire that makes you think that you're a physical body, mind, intellect. And it's very urgent that you do it right away. Because the more you wait, the more of these vasanas you pick up. More and more desires come in, and it becomes like a rolling stone. It becomes like an avalanche. It goes on gathering more and more snow, and it rolls downhill and goes endlessly. So you don't want to do that. Right? So therefore you want to clip it right there. Nip it in the bud right away. Okay? So this is the idea here. Okay, so, and this Om represents the essence of the waking, dream, and deep sleep worlds. See? Okay? Now, this another sloka is there in the Dakshinamurti sloka. Okay? What it says, Om Namah Pranavartaya Shuddha Jnanaika Murtaye Nirmalaya Prashantaya Dakshinamurtaye Namaha. Lord Dakshinamurti is the form of Lord Shiva. This is a very specific form of Lord Shiva, and this form of Lord Shiva faces south. Why is it facing south? Nobody ever faces south here. Why? Because south is the direction of death. Okay, nobody even builds a house facing south. Nobody does any religious activity facing south, because that's supposed to be the direction of death. But Lord Shiva is facing that south like this defiantly. And he's just facing south and meditate, and is in deep meditation. Now, when the Lord is facing, why is this? Because one of the names of the Lord is Mrityunjaya. That means who is victorious over death. He doesn't care because he's beyond the body. So what is going to die? The body. But he knows he's not the body. So why does he care? So he doesn't care whether he's facing south or this or whatever. But he's facing south. And if you go to Kailash Yatra, you'll see there's a south facing. You see the south face, right? In fact, when I went there, I chanted this. Okay, so this Om Namah Pranavartaya, what does it mean? It says that Lord is nothing but the form of this Pranava. And what is it? He's saying that salutations to that embodiment of the Pranava, who is this Lord, who is a personification of the pure non-dual knowledge. Shuddha Jnanaika Murtiya, pure. Shuddha means pure. Jnanaika Murtiya, the embodiment of pure knowledge. So this Lord is like the embodiment of pure knowledge. And what else does it say? Nirmalaya Prashantaya. Prashantaya means peace beyond comprehension. Nirmalaya means without any impurities. That means no mental impurities. You know, what are impurities? Impurities are things that take us away from our true self. For example, an impure mind. Impure mind means you have negativities in your mind. You have judgmental issues. Okay? All these have to be cleaned out. You have this pair of opposites. You have that also in you. When we have all of this, and most of us are like that. We have these issues. So we need to clean up that act. So cleaning up that act and making that mind clean is what we call here the Shuddha Jnanaika Murtiye. Nirmalaya. Nirmal means no dirt in Sanskrit. Prashantaya Dakshina. So I worship that Dakshinamurti who is facing south, who's the embodiment of pure knowledge and whose mind is perfectly pure. This is the mantra. Very nice. And it says, what else is it telling you? It's telling you that, you know, remember, your nature is also pure. Our intrinsic nature is pure, right? Because we are a state of being. We are not, well, we call ourselves human beings, but we are actually being, pure being. But but because of our all these qualities and this and that, and we associate ourselves with our body, everything else, we became human beings. And sometimes we don't even behave like human beings. And that is the sad part. Okay, so this is saying salutations to that. And then another thing. So it says here also that another very beautiful thing it says here. Chidagnaya Maheshaya Vatamula Nivasane Satchidananda Rupaya Dakshinamurtaye Namah. Satchidananda Rupa. That means Sat Chit Ananda. Sat means existence. Chit means knowledge. And Ananda means bliss. That pure self, these are the three, if you want to call it qualities, which you cannot say, but still you have to call it something. Therefore you say Sat Chit Ananda. How is the self described? Satchidananda. That means its existence, knowledge and bliss. And what's the meaning of that? That means existence, because why is existence there always? Because existence is the same thing as saying consciousness. Because if I were to take a seed and the seed were to break, the seed is no more, but the sprout is. The sprout is no more, but the plant is. The plant is no more, but the tree is. You notice everywhere there's a is. That never disappears. One thing is destroyed, but the other thing is there. This is destroyed, that is there. So nothing is destroyed. The isness never stops. That isness is also called presence. And that presence is nothing but consciousness. You understand? That's what we're talking about. Okay. So this isness is isness is this sat part. Chit means knowledge. Because that which is consciousness is everywhere. Therefore, it has knowledge of everything. There's nothing that is not known. You know, if somebody says, can you take this thing and eat it somewhere where nobody can see you? Ridiculous. You cannot. In fact, there's a story of a person, a king who had three, he wanted to pick an appropriate person for the crown as a prince. So he took all his children and told them, he gave each a banana and told them, eat it somewhere where nobody will see you. And two people said, yes, I went. One guy went deep into a cave all the way. Another guy went all the way into the Himalayas all the way. And he didn't see anybody physically. But the third guy said, I could not. And he gave the crown to the third guy because he knew that that person had realized that consciousness is everywhere. You cannot hide anything from yourself. Because yourself is nothing but God. Consciousness is your nature. Okay? So this is the idea. So we must always remember that is what we are. So it's a mass of consciousness. See, Chidagnaya Maheshaya. That means, you know, if you take all this consciousness and if you were to say, how would I concentrate it in one form? That would be a form like a Krishna. That would be like a Shiva, like a Christ, like a Buddha. All these are forms of consciousness where the consciousness is focused and concentrated in one form. Although it's everywhere, but how would you say manifested God? That's how you would say it. Where the consciousness is concentrated in one form, everywhere. Okay, a mass of consciousness. Okay, so therefore, and then you know another book called Drik Drishya Viveka. That's another Vedanta text. You know what it says? Upeksha nama rupe dve sachidananda tatparaha. What is the meaning of that? Nama Rupa. Nama Rupa means name and form. Upeksha means ignore the name and form. And what do? Satchidananda Tatparaha. You know, so Satchidananda is what? The self. Satchidananda. So keep your sight on that Satchidananda on everybody. Don't look at the outside form. Don't look at the form and judge a person or judge anything by the form. Understand that there is something that pervades all that form, and that is what your mind should be on. And that something is Sat Chit Ananda. Say, how nice. You know, the Vedanta text is very nice. Vedanta text, it tells you that, okay? It's called Drik Drishya Viveka. That means, who is the seer and the seen? That's what this means, okay? So ignoring all this, and then in the Mandukya Upanishad, you know how beautiful, look at this. Mandukyam ekam eva alam mumukshuna mumuktaye. For the liberation of, or for liberation of a person, the Mandukya alone is enough. That Upanishad alone is enough. That's what it says. Now, what clue does this Upanishad give us to align with that? See, this says so many things. Hari Om, Om ityeksharamidam sarvam. Hari Om, that means Hari Om. It starts with Hari Om, see? He says, Om iti eka aksharam idam sarvam. What is he saying? Om, the word Om, that word Om is all this. And then what is he saying? Tasya upavakyanam bhutam bhavat bhavishyaditi, bhavishyaditi. All that is past, present and future verily is Om. Anything that is past, present, future is Om. Then, sarvam omkaram eva yachandyate trikalatitam tadapi omkara eva. He's saying that which is beyond the three periods of time is also Om. See that? So that which transcends time, that which transcends the past, present, future, everything else, that is what Om is. This is Upanishad, okay? Okay, this is a very powerful Upanishad. It's also so. Om verily transcends. It's so. You know, another thing the Upanishad says, the A, U, and if you look at them, A represents the waking state. You know, and why does it represent waking state? See, this Upanishad is trying to tell you that whatever is manifested here is also that Om. Whatever is unmanifested is also Om. So how does it explain that? Very, very well it explains. It says that the word A, you know, supposing you get up from sleep, and you don't want to say anything, and you're lazy, and you don't want to say the most lazy sound that you can do is I'm not even opening my mouth. So it's like a fundamental sound. So the fundamental sound is see, and that is needed for a lot of things, even a lot of Western names. Say somebody is called Tom. Where is the Sanskrit in it? Tom is it plus You can't make ta. So it means it plus a. So the a sound comes in there already. So it is saying that if in order to make any names, to say anything in this universe, you need a, u, m. Either one of these three or all three. And a is the most fundamental sound. So therefore it is saying, see, the point is that this whole world of names and forms cannot be described without the om. Therefore, the manifested world represents om. Represents the Lord. And then what else is it saying? Is it saying that part which is unmanifested, which you don't see, is also the Om. Because why is that? Because when I say Om, you know, Om has a peak and then it comes down. A peak and it comes down. Right? So when I say Om, Om silence. Om silence. Om silence. But you see, the silence pervades everything. So I would say the Om came from the silence. The silence was already there. In the beginning was the silence, then the Om came in that. See that? So what is it telling you? This silence is the unmanifested Lord. And the AUM is the manifested Lord. See that? So this whole world of names and forms is nothing but God, 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 and God. The whole world that is unmanifest is also God, 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 and God. And if you look at this text called Purusha Suktam, which we have, it's a mantra that we chant whenever we do Abhisheka, when you pour the milk or something on the deity. The Lord is saying that 1/4 of my glory is this universe. Just imagine, 3/4 of my glory is unmanifested. Can you imagine what that? How powerful that is? That means you don't know 3/4 of this of this glorious thing. And that 3/4 unmanifested thing is the silent part of the Om. And the 1/4 that you know is so small. And even that 1/4 is so awesome. Just imagine what the 3/4 is like. Huh? You know, it's so inspiring to see that. It's so tremendous. It's so awesome. So therefore the A, U, so A is the waking state. Ooh is the dream state. Is the deep sleep. See, because is like a closure of everything. Right? Ooh is like the intermediate state. Is like the waking. So when you take the waking, dream, deep sleep, all these three, we all go through that. Therefore, every person is nothing but that. Every being goes through that. Animals, all of us, everybody, right? Whether they have dreams or not, we don't know. But they all go through, everybody goes through the AUM, the waking state, dream, deep sleep. And then the other thing is the unmanifested Lord, okay? Which is silence. That, now, in this phenomenal learning universe, even the names and forms can be described in terms of AUM, as we said. Okay, and okay, so we talked about this. Yeah. Now, although this OM covers all three realms of time, then you may ask yourself, why can't I dream and realize the self in a dream? You can't. Why? Because your vasanas come up only when you wake up, isn't it? You have to work on the vasanas that you have. Unless you work on the vasanas, you cannot transcend that. You have to transcend your vasanas to be able to reach that. And the vasanas come up in your waking state. Therefore, you cannot dream and reach there. That'll be fun. Go to deep sleep and reach there. Impossible. So it has to be done. It has to be done according to your karma. See, you have to perform the karma as a yoga. Not as a karma. If you do it as a karma, you'll get back more vasanas. But if you do it as a yoga, it dissipates the existing vasanas. See that? And your mind becomes clear. See, that's the point, okay? Every time you have to understand that. Okay, now. So the next thing here. Yeah. Now, understanding the end of the journey. Here, it indicates. So this dot or the bindu, that's called bindu, the dot. See, that's why everybody puts that here. You know, all the women, men and women in India, they put that here. Why? Because the symbolism is that I'm trying to remind myself of my divine nature. Not because it looks good. It also looks good. But but more so because of this. This is a spiritual reason. Okay? It's reminding yourself, being reminded of your true self. That this is the center. And if you look at it also, it's right. Because if you go into deep meditation, you will see that your eyes move into this spot and stay there. This is the center. Because this is called Agnya Chakra. Agnya Chakra is where, that's where the knowledge emanates. That's the third eye that we call third eye. Remember, when you look through these eyes, you don't look through the physical eyes. Therefore, your vision is not distorted. When you look through the physical eyes, your vision is distorted by the quality of your mind. When you look through these eyes, your vision is undistorted. See that? That is why the Mahatmas know more. You don't argue with a Mahatma. When he says, you're wrong, yes, I'm wrong. Thank you. You know, Gurudev, we had a camp once in Claremore. And you know, I was organizing the camp. So I got I was very worried because there were so many things to plan in the camp. So I went and early morning, I had this worry in my mind. So I went and followed him while he was walking. And I got around and said, Gurudev, I have a question. And I asked him the question. He said, do you think this is the right time to ask that question? I said, no. And I went back. And then I saw and I read about it and I saw why. You know, every master, nobody asked the master a question when that master was not calm. You look at the Tulsi Ramayana, Sri Rama is sitting quietly when Lakshmana asks him all the questions about what is bhakti, what is jnana, what is devotion, what is vairagya, what is all this, what is all this maya, what is all this about? But when did he ask him that question? When he found that he was in Sukha Asana. Quiet. Guruji also told me that he was inside a bus and he was wearing his yellow robe, yellow cloth, like brahmachari clothes at that time when he was a brahmachari. And he's holding on to the bus and so many people in that crowded bus. And somebody is asking him, where are you going? So he said, I'm going to a Gita talk. And he said, what's in the Gita? He's asking him in a crowded bus. How can you explain these things? So there is a time and a place to ask those questions. And I learned that really. So correct. He's so right, you know. These masters are always right. Never argue with them. They know what they're doing. Because they're looking through this eye, not here. You know, there are so many arguments. If you look at Shankaracharya, Shankaracharya and another person, Bradley, commentator, they looked at two different things. They looked at the same problem. And Bradley figured out some answer or something, and Shankaracharya figured out. Bradley went through all the logic and all that stuff. And he's done it. Shankaracharya straight away said, this is the thing. He didn't have to think. See, the person, you know, because the intuitive mind works. The other person's intellectual mind goes on discussing this, this, this. And logic could also go wrong. But the intuitive mind can never be wrong. Because a master is saying it. The master is perfect. And perfection comes. The words come out perfect from a master. Therefore, that, you know, you can see. So all these masters, they really know what they're doing. Okay? So now there is a stage of yoga meditation which all these experiences collapse to a point. This point is supposed to be that point of collapse. This little bindu is supposed to be the end point. Okay? It's very, very, see, that's why it is very sacred. This. That end point. Okay? Now let's talk about that. The bindu is near the end of the subtlest aspect of mind, after which one travels beyond or transcends the mind and contents. Like a point represents infinity. So that represents infinity. Okay? It is near the end of time, space and causation and is the doorway to the absolute. That's the reason why that third eye is that when your vision goes there and you're seeing through that, you are there. Okay, physically, okay. To understand this principle is important in meditation. Okay, now let's see. There's something called convergence of practice. What is this called? See, this will come in a talk in meditation. It's very, very important for meditation. So let me tell you. There are processes in meditation that are complementary. When you do two things together, it helps each other, okay? And not contradictory, okay? And they lead towards the direction of that bindu. And they say this bindu is the convergence points of meditation, contemplation, prayer, and mantra. All four, that point. Okay. It represents the convergent point of the highest principles of yoga, Vedanta, and Tantra. All these three. Okay. Now let's see how that happens. These four things work as a team. What works as a team? Meditation, contemplation, prayer, and mantra. All they go to the subtler stages, becoming increasingly powerful as a team and moving one to the highest spiritual awakening. Now, if you look at Ramana Maharshi's Upadesha Saram, so beautifully it's discussed. You know, he's saying that you start with mantra and you chant it loud. Then you take that mantra and you chant it soft. Then do the same thing and chant it in your mind. Then after that, get away from that mantra. And just be quiet. So you chant and then you reach the silence. Okay? And then he says, how do you abide in the silence? He says, abide in it permanently. Not in spurts. You silence and then again and this don't go up and down, up and down. But if you don't do anything, at least go up and down. But the point is, sarala chintanam virata param. If you look at Upadesha Saram, how beautifully it tells you. He says, dhyanam uttamam. Dhyanam means meditation is the most important thing. Now, so how is an example of mantra leading to contemplation? Now, let me give you an example. Okay. In chapter 7, verse 7 in Gita, there's a very beautiful shloka that Sri Krishna says, matta parataram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya mai sarvam idam proktam sutre manigana eva. Now, look at them. I'll show you the superficial meaning. And you see the depth to which you can contemplate and where it takes you. Matta Paratam. Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna, do you realize that everything in this universe is strung on me just like beads are strung on a string? He's saying that. Now you say, oh, wow, that's awesome. Hey, so the Lord is the one and we are all strung on him. Okay, that's the first meaning. But look at what it really implies. Just imagine. If you were a bead, and if you thought you were a bead, and forgot the string in there, what's happening? That means you think of yourself as this physical body. And you think the next bead, oh, it's not as shiny as I am. Or, this is a freshwater pearl and this is an ordinary pearl. So, you know, you compare, you tend to compare if you think you're a bead. But if you thought that you were the string, just see, the string is the same everywhere. See how it turns you in that direction? And the string is nothing but, that string is nothing but the Krishna in there. And the Krishna is nothing but the consciousness. And you know that the consciousness pervades all the universe. And that's what he's trying to tell you. See that? You know, see how you just look at a string and beads, and then, and the string and the beads are very important even for management. Because if I was having a meeting and I was a manager, and I thought that, oh, this is I don't care for that guy, you know, I'm the boss here, you know, I'm the CEO of this company, I don't care for this guy, I'll do what I want, the company's not going to go well. But if I understand that everything is a string, and I give credit to each one, even chapter 3 in the Gita talks about that very much. Spirit of yajna, doing things together, that spirit of togetherness. So when everything works in the spirit of togetherness, then nothing is left out. And everything happens nicely. Right? So this is the idea. Okay? So therefore, the point is, therefore this contemplation takes, so you can see that you started off with a mantra and slowly you went to this contemplation state and reached that. Right? Now, another thing to contemplate, for example, in this Dakshinamurti Stotram, it says, Mauno Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam Varsishtante Vasatrishiganehi Avratam Brahmanishtai Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudram Anandarupam Swatma Arama Mudita Vadanam Dakshinamurti Mide. Now, what is the meaning of all that? The meaning of all that is very profound. Mauno Vyakya, this Lord Dakshinamurti, who is the form of Lord Shiva facing south, is giving a message. He's not talking, but he's giving a message through the message of silence. How is he able to give a message through silence? You can see that happens even in home. Supposing a little kid is touching the... he's putting his finger near the electrical outlet. Mom looks... That look like that, that silent look is enough. Don't touch that. Okay. But here, what is Lord Shiva saying? He's saying that, you know, I'm giving that message. Why am I giving this message in silence? Because I cannot talk about that infinite reality. There are no words to describe it. Words will not reach it. The mantra, the mind will not reach it. It's incapable of being reached by words, incapable of reaching by the mind. So he's saying, that is why I'm giving it to you in this silence, Chinmudra. All of you know what this is, right? That thou art. You're not the body, you're not the mind, you're not the intellect. So I disconnect from these, I detach from this and attach to this. You understand? This is a super mantra. This is what is called Tat Tvam Asi. Tat Tvam Asi. That thou art. That infinite oneness is what each one of us is. That's what he's saying. That's what Lord Shiva is saying. And he's saying that I'm not only giving this because you have to be, not only I'm giving it to you because I cannot tell you about it because I'm unable to speak about it through in words. Not only that, I'm also saying that you better be silent if you want to understand what I'm saying. See, so the mind of the listener must also be quiet when he's listening to this. Mind means, you know, not the even the chattering in your mind is not good. So, when you listen to a great soul, your mind must be quiet. Which reminds me, Gurudev, in one of his talks, right? Somebody was, he was very serious, going into some subject in depth. And two or three guys were talking. He stopped and changed the trend of his story. He said, an artist can paint in two dimensions. And when you paint in two dimensions, you can see more or less what's happening. A sculptor can sculpt in three dimensions. And then if there's a horse in there, you can see the movement of the horse and you can see the rider on the horse and you can go around the horse and look at this side and look at that side. Huh? But I'm trying to paint on the canvas of your mind. If your canvas of your mind is fluctuating, how can I paint? Look at what he's saying. You know, a sculptor can do that. But he is also trying to do something. He's trying to paint this thing on your mind. He's trying to paint the scripture. He's trying to paint a difficult thought train into your mind. But if you constantly chat or do something, how can you paint there? So he's saying it's a fluttering canvas. when the canvas itself is fluctuating, how can I paint? How can I paint my words on your mind? That's the quality of a master. Just to show you, see. Okay, so here he's saying, so this message of silence is given by this great teacher, and he talks about this because he understands that only silence alone can show you what it is. You cannot say it by words. You know, the Upanishad, the Vedas themselves declare, yato vacha nivartante aprapya manasa saha. Words cannot reach it, the mind cannot, mind is unable to transcend that. And it's true, because we don't describe by words, isn't it? Vedanta, you can see, it doesn't say any description. It says, achintya bhavyaktam anantarupam, unthinkable, unmanifested, that is the definition of the infinite. What kind of a definition is that? Unthinkable, unmanifested. It's an indefinable definition. Isn't it? So too, this is what he's saying. Okay, now, after all this, so look at these processes. Thought, contemplation may start with a verbal thought process, as we started, okay, on that mantra I told you, Sri Krishna's, the string and the beads. Second, reflection must be done to deepen, to quiet the reflection. Reflection has to be done to deepen that contemplation. Third, intuition, later bring intuitive wisdom into that. Like, for example, that is the light of consciousness that the Lord is talking about. That is the intuitive wisdom that you bring into it. Okay? And then knowing then leads to a formless knowing. You see that? How I went from a form to the formless. You understand? You understand, right? Yes. Say, let me hear, say yes or no.
Yes.
Okay. because you're going from the, you're trying to go from the form to the formless. And you're using this technique. That is what it's telling you. Okay? So contemplation moves inwards. Contemplation goes from the gross to the subtle, to subtler and to the subtle most. As attention moves progressively inward, the more external, gross, verbal way of thinking recedes, leading us to the very core of the intuitive being, which is you. How do we see the unmanifest in the manifest? Okay? That's another thing. Okay, never mind. Another one. I'm going to skip some things here. Okay. Now, Chandogya Upanishad, another Upanishad. What does it say? It says that let a man meditate on Om. What is it? He calls this Om, it's called Udgita. He's saying the significance of this syllable Om is this. The essence of all beings is the earth. The essence of earth is water. The essence of water are the plants. The essence of plants is man. The essence of man is speech. The essence of speech is the Rig Veda. And the essence of the Rig Veda is the Sama Veda. Essence of the Sama Veda is the Udgita. That means the Om. See that? He's saying that in other words, to cut the story short, he's saying that Om transcends all this. It goes through the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, through all the Vedas. It transcends all the Vedas. So that's why I was telling you, it's like a needle that pierces all the scriptures from the beginning of time, wherever time started or didn't start. That from the beginning all the way to the end. That is why it's such a powerful thing. If you know Om, you don't need to know anything else. But you have to focus on that. Okay? That is how powerful it is. Okay. And then there are other Upanishads which go on. I won't tell you so much about this because it's too much, it will take too much time. Okay, then another thing. You know, if you look at a book, there's a book called Snowboarding in the Himalayas. It's a very nice text. If you look at, some of you may have read it. Yeah. Okay. Look at that text, if you look at that book, this guy, he's from here, and he's a snowboarder, and he's trying to do that in the Himalayas. Not snowboarding, sorry, surfboarding. No, surfboarding. Snowboarding, correct, correct. Snowboarding. Yeah. Okay. So he goes, and he takes his snowboard over to the Himalayas. And he goes there, and he goes to the highest mountain, and he starts doing this thing. And he goes, he's a very daring guy. So he goes up a peak and just goes straight. He didn't check what's on the other side. But he went and he went over that cliff, and there was nothing underneath. He was almost falling down, but he was stopped in midair. And a master, he said, I am the reason you stopped there. Then the master asked him, Zen master. He said, I stopped you there because you have some questions, I know. So he's asking the question. He's coolly asking a question. How do I become the best snowboarder? That was the question. Nothing else. Not how do I get my life back out of nothing. How do I become the best snowboarder? He says, when the snowboard, the snowboarder, and the thing you're going over become one. So when the meditator, the meditated, and the object and the meditation become one, that is exactly what he's doing. Okay? Same thing, same analogy here. Okay? This Om is a vibration, a universal vibration. Now, if you look at Manu Smriti, that is, you know, the Lord of Manu is one of the lawmakers. And the Puranas, all these talk about this Om in a very significant way. Okay, he's saying it's like a vibration which has a sympathy or synchrony with cosmic vibration, and for the time being, we are in tune with the cosmos. Okay, then. Now, the Gayatri Mantra also has this thing. I will cover that 2 days from now. Okay, that'll make sure you come to the talk. Okay, okay. Then the other thing is, So, the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 17, you'll get there are references to the Om. You can look it up, okay? Because it's verse number 17, 25, 26, okay? It talks about Om Tat Sat and Om, what it represents, okay? Now, another thing, when you go to, in the Upanishad, I was telling you, it says here, Om Kham Brahma, Kham Puranam, Puranam, Vayur Kham Iti, Ha Smaham, Kauravyayani Putra, Vedoyam Brahmana Viduhu. Now, Kauravyani is one of the philosophers. And he was the one who put this together. And he's a great philosopher, you know. So what did he say? He's saying, Om is the ether. That means it's the space. See, he's showing you how subtle it is. So he's saying, it is the ether Brahman. That means it's the space Brahman. See, that means what is more subtle? The only thing that you can comprehend of that is subtle is space. Right? But imagine space that is intelligent, and has all the other qualities also. Space is not intelligent, but when you attribute intelligence, all that space becomes like that Brahman, right? Close to it. Then he says, it's the eternal ether. See, eternal ether, not eternal. That means it's talking about God. It's talking about the Brahman. But he's describing the Brahman in a different way, because how can you say formless and without form? So he's talking about space. He's using space as the analogy, but he's saying eternal ether. Okay? And then what else he's saying? The ether containing air. And then he says that this is the highest Veda, he's saying. In the beginning, there were no Vedas as such, only the Pranava existed. Om or Pranava was the Veda. He said that to start with, in fact, they took this Pranava, this Om, and they created different things. And one of these things happened to be the Gayatri. And the other one happened to be the Purusha Suktam that I talked about. And finally, the three Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda. See, all these things, imagine they have come from the Om. All these scriptures, what I'm talking about, all the Vedas, everything have come from there. Okay? They're all contained like the branches of a huge tree inside the small seed called the Pranava, Om. See? That's how powerful it is. Okay. Vedo ayam brahmana vidu brahmana viduhu. All the knowers have declared Om as the Veda itself. See? That is the Veda. The other Vedas are all there, but nothing came. But that was there. This was there before all those. Before the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, all those things. And whatever is to be known can be known through this. And look at what he says here. Here about this. Yes. Their Lord contained like the branches of a huge tree inside the small seed, which is called the Pranava or the Om. So Om is everything. It is the Veda itself, and all the Vedas have come from this seed. Okay. Then he says here that what knowledge can be higher than this great knowledge, where you're told everything that has to be told. He's saying that's what this Om is. Okay. Veda, and he's saying, Eka Eva Pura Veda Pranava Sarva Vangmaya. In the beginning, there were no Vedas, only the Pranava existed. See, again and again, he repeats the same thought process. Okay? And then he goes on to say, as a stick, all leaves are pierced, so also all speech is pierced by Om. And then here is another reason why Om is the Veda, because it's like a stick that pierces all these leaves. You know, I was sending you a needle that pierces all these leaves. This is from the Upanishad. This is not my, this is all that thought process. Now let's go to Buddhism. How is that, how does that work? Look at that. You've heard that mantra. Om Mane Padme Hum, Om Mane Padme Hum, right? How does that figure here? He's saying this Om, again, this is again from there. It consists of these three letters, A-U-M, right? Can the impure BMI be purified? Just as a jewel is capable of removing poverty, so the altruistic mind of enlightenment is capable of removing the poverty or difficulties of cyclic existence and solitary peace. See that? This is supposed to do that. Okay. The two syllables, Padme, means lotus, right? As you know. And you know that a lotus is a symbol of detachment. Because it stays in the water, it doesn't get wet, but it can stay in the water and not get wet. It's like a sage, or it's like a great Mahatma who can stay in the world and not imbibe all the stuff from the world, but still stay pure. So here also, so this Padme remembers that. Okay, so just as a lotus grows forth from mud and is not sullied by the faults of mud, so too wisdom is capable of putting you in a situation for non-contradiction. Whereas there would be contradiction if you did not have wisdom. So that Padme represents the wisdom. Now, there is a wisdom realizing impermanence. What is this? What is this wisdom that you're realizing? Impermanence. Wisdom realizing that persons are empty of self-sufficient or substantial existence. Wisdom that realizes the emptiness of duality. Right? That we are talking about in Advaita. Right? Okay. And wisdom that realizes emptiness of inherent existence. That's like Buddhist philosophy. You know that. And so the purity must be achieved by an indivisible unity of method and wisdom. And what is that method and wisdom? What is that thing symbolized by the final symbol? Hum. That's why Om Mane Padme Hum. Mani is a jewel. Okay. So you're seeing that this jewel of this lotus is sitting there. And the hum is the, it indicates the indivisibility. It's like Advaita. It's like putting Advaita on the top. Indivisibility. That is one homogeneous thing. So Om Mane Padme Hum is a same prayer. It's invoking that Om and saying that that is the wisdom that penetrates through all this. And then I'm putting a cap on this whole thing with the word hum. Hum is like a seed mantra. It's like a bija mantra. And that hum indicates indivisibility. One without a second. Okay? Okay, so this is about Om. Now let me finish, conclude here. Okay, therefore, the spiritual life in goal in life must be to know ourselves, to realize our divine essence, and then we have to merge into Godhood. Currently, what we are is victims of Maya, that thing that goes in there, and subject to spiritual ignorance. In chapter 8, Sri Krishna tells Arjuna that the time the body passes on, one can remember this divine essence in the form of the pranava. One will reach him immediately. We all realize this cannot suddenly happen. We need to make a sincere attempt. We need to seek out the pranava wherever it is manifested and as far as possible abide in it. And how do you do that? Use all these teachings that we talked about. The Mandukya Upanishad, how the waking dream, deep sleep state, everything, this transcends, Om transcends all these three. How Om represents the manifested and unmanifest. How that Shiva, I told you, the wave of the Om. The peak and the silence. So this is the world that is manifested and this is the world that's unmanifested. And also the fact that 3/4 of the world that is unmanifested is described by that. And only 1/4 that you are aware of is which is also so awesome, is so great. Just imagine how much is the other 3/4. Imagine how big, how great that is. So when you live in the spirit of the pranava, then the chances of contemplating, uttering the sound of pranava before physical death is good. See, that means you cannot, if the Lord Krishna says, okay, you remember Om at the last moment, doesn't mean, oh, I'm on my deathbed, I say, Om, I'll reach there. First of all, you will not think Om. Because you'll think, oh, what's happened, what about my kids, what about my this, that, all the relatives, everything will come into the picture. Oh, what about me, what's going to happen to my insurance? Where is the thought? Unless you start now, how is it going to happen, isn't it? You have to do something. So that's why you have to keep constantly on this. Constantly think about it. Constantly contemplate on this. Meanwhile, we need to ensure mind is kept busy through karma, bhakti, and jnana yoga. You know, see, our scriptures give us so much of latitude, so many ways, so many methods. You know, if you're a very restless person, then go and do the karma yoga. Go and use your physical body to serve humanity. If you're a person with a mental thing and you turn on that love towards God and do that. And if you're an intellectual, then look into the world, question the world and say, you know, what should you do? What should you do in order to understand that everything is not permanent? So all these things are there. So we have a lot of flexibility. And so with Puja Gurudev's guidance and guidance from our masters, we can move towards that goal. So let us strive together with Puja Gurudev's grace. Okay. Thank you. You have any questions? Yes. Yes.
Well, there's nothing other than Om before that.
Yes, correct. That's what they say. That's what the Upanishad says.
Okay.
Because, you know, something, you know, even in our story, you see Brahma, when Brahma created the thing, that sound that he did was the Om sound.
So the sound at the time of creation.
Yes, at the time of creation. So everything starts off with that. See, this is not me, it's Upanishad saying this. Chandogya Upanishad was way, way, way back. Okay, and these all great masters have written this. And they have no reason to tell us anything different than the truth.
And the second question you mentioned about south is the direction of the death.
That, how did that come?
No, but I'm talking about that it's a relative thing, right? What is south and north is all relative.
Yes, see, so it is.
There is nothing like south until there is a north.
Yes.
So it's our own kind, it's just an inference. I'm sorry, it's just a guidepost.
Yes, I don't
what
know.
Is south and what is
yeah. I don't know where it came from, but it's there. You know that it's there because people use that when they construct houses. Also, they make sure they don't face south and do anything, because south is considered. You know, different devatas have different directions, and if you believe in those individual devatas, then you say south. But you know, if you see, understand one thing: when Lord Dakshinamurti is facing south, you are facing north. So you are getting knowledge. North is supposed to be the direction which knowledge is accepted in the best possible way.
But that is when he's teaching. God is Sarvantriyami, but then what exactly is north and south?
It doesn't matter. I just mentioned it, but it doesn't matter really. You know, it's your own belief.
Because if I am seeing you, I'm south. You are seeing me, I'm north. And then we can change the world.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's a relative concept.
It is. But you know, see, all the scriptures have a lot of Puranas and things. A lot of things are mixed up in it also. You know, they may have a reason for it, but I have not read about what the reason is. But I know that people, you do that when they build houses, they try not to do it that way.
Because by that confusion, as you go, let's say, towards the North Pole, as an example, right?
Yeah.
There's no, what is the sign? It's 24 hours sunlight.
I agree.
Then what is the definition of
I understand. There's no North Pole. If you go into space, where is any direction?
Exactly.
You're floating all over the place. There's no east, west. So you don't even know where you are.
So that being the case,
yes.
Then, facing south, north, east, west, they're all same. You made that direction name.
Yeah, but that's okay. Yeah, correct. Agreed. But that still doesn't preclude us from the Om.
No, Om is
I'm saying, yeah, that is totally different, right? These are just, I just mentioned it because that's the way the Dakshinamurti Stotram starts off, with the fact that he's facing south. There are two things, okay? There are two interpretations. One says Dakshinamurti. Dakshina means south. And then another thing is called Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti means one who is an expert. Amurti means one who is beyond form, name and form. See, so you can say Dakshina means south, but Dakshin means expert. See that? So there's interpretation things in there in Sanskrit word. So Dakshinamurti means one who is formless and who is an expert at everything. That makes more sense than if you say Dakshinamurti. You see that? So, yeah. Somebody else, yes. That's what they say, yes.
So there is a scientific reason somewhere I read that the magnetic field of
yes.
the earth, which travels through your body when you're sleeping.
That's why the north
side. Yeah.
A certain direction is
correct
for that.
Okay.
When you wake up from that direction, you're more energetic.
Yes, okay.
If you go in the opposite direction, you wake up kind of tired.
Okay.
So that's one thing is scientific, I think. And I don't know about the scriptures, but that is, it's somewhere. It
yeah. Good. Some logic points. Yes. Anybody else? Yes.
How does Soham relate to Om?
Oh, Soham. Soham means he am I. Okay. Saha Aham. He is what I am. In fact, Ramana Maharshi uses that as the meditation thing. He says, Bheda Bhavana Sohamityasau. Bhavana bida pavani mata. Ramana Maharshi says in Upadesha Saram, he's saying, instead of considering yourself separate from God, instead of considering yourself as separate from God, then what you should do is consider the fact that He am I. Not meaning this body. My real essence is that. So do that in your meditation and don't think of the Lord as separate from you. See, if you look at it this way, if you say, no, how can I, it's blasphemy. But that's all, that doesn't make any sense. Because how dare you say the Lord, that means you're separating Lord from you, that means the Lord in you, Lord is not in you. How dare you say that? With one voice you say that Lord is everywhere. And then in another voice you're saying, the Lord is there and I'm here. How can you do that? So it doesn't make sense. So Saha Aham is right. And Omkar is the same thing because Om, A-U-M is everywhere also. So the Soham, Saha, that Saha refers to the Om.
So is it proper to say Saha versus So?
The Sanskrit, if you split it up, it says Saha Aham. But when you say the mantra together, you say Soham. Soham is the same as saying, if you want to split the words in Sanskrit, that He am I, Saha Aham. Saham is He. He am I. Or if you say Soham, it becomes a mantra. Soham, Soham, Soham. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a pitch for, to say the Om, a certain pitch?
There's no pitch. No. But it's important that you chant it loud, long, and listen to the vibrations. And feel the fact that it's a super sacred mantra. There's no pitch. You can use whatever pitch you want. See, and then the longer you hold on to it, remember the stuff that I said, that it's like a thread, it's like a needle that pierces every scripture. And put that thought in your mind and understand how awesome it is. And with that awesomeness, chant. Understanding how awesome it is, that's how you should chant. It's how you feel and how much feeling you put into that, how much thought you put into it is what brings you there. It's like anything else. If I look at Sri Krishna's message, and if I look at the surface meaning, it looks like that. But if I look at the depth, it is amazing. If I look at Shankaracharya's Bhajagovindam, if you take the surface meaning, you'll see one thing. But if you look at the depth, you see so much. See, Gurudev made us always read every chapter. He said, read it three times, not once. Three times. Why? It'll read it. And second time you say, oh, that's what it means. Third, wow, I get it. It hits you at different depths. And it's really satisfying inside. When you understand what goes on, it touches you. Because it touches the roots of your being. When you do it on the surface, it doesn't touch the roots. See? Huh? It waters the roots of your being. That's what it does. when you really contemplate on it with its meaning. Huh? Yeah, see, this is the same philosophy in love, right? When I love something, I try to know more about that person, right? I try to know more and more about that person. Even in the love that I get here, loved here also. I try to know more about that person. And when I know about that person and I see how great it is, my respect goes up. isn't it? She's like, Krishna, I love Krishna. Okay, when I see the little antics of Krishna, oh, it's so nice. But then I see this Krishna standing majestically up there and talking to Arjuna, and I said, what is this about? And then I look at one of the shlokas in the Gita and said, wow, that's how awesome he is. See, so it goes up. You know, your love for the Lord increases. See, there are two things. One is called love, the other is respect. When love and respect come together, it becomes reverence. And that's what you put together. That's what you feel for Krishna or whatever deity you choose. So you have to bring to bear all these things in one package and let it go on. See, that is why you see many places in Gita, he says, worship me with your entire being. Not just for name, just Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. No, no. Understand me in depth and worship me with your entire being. That is what is. And that's what makes it good. You know, you can feel, if you constantly think of that Lord every time, you can feel the presence. Because it will not, you know, you will try to look at a picture, but the Lord will shut your eyes when you look at a picture. You won't be able to look at it. Trick. It's a trick. I'm not there. I'm here. It's really something. Magical Lord. Yes, really. Okay, anything else? Anybody else? Any question? Okay. So, please come tomorrow.
I have one more question.
Yes.
What is the difference between Hari Om and Namaste?
Namaste and Hari Om.
Namaste and Hari Om. See, Namaste, the variation, I just read somewhere, it came from the word Idam Na Mama. And Idam Na Mama means, this is not me. That means it is negating your ego. Idam Na Mama. And that Nama becomes Namaste. Namaste means I bow down to you. This is what we say. Namaste, like this, okay? When you say Hari Om, I recognize God in you. That's what you're saying. But the origin of the word Namaste itself came from Idam Namama. Because, you know, when we pour oblations into the fire, we say, hey Lord, it is not, you know, I didn't do it, my negativities did all this. See, so you're negating your body. Saying, I didn't want to do this, but my body, what to do? And you just put that into the fire, offer that into the fire. It's what you feel that is most important. It's not, you know, I was telling a kid, we used to teach Ganga Stotram. You know, there's a Ganga Stotram chant in the book about the Ganga, or the glory of the Ganga River. There's a chant. And I used to teach those kids in the Balvihar long time ago. And I told those kids, if you think, you know, I know that you can't go to India and hit the Ganga water. But if you stand in your shower and think that Ganga water is falling on your head, Ganga water will fall on your head. And it's true. It's how you think. It is amazing how you think. Ganga is definitely, it's got all that thing in it. But if you can't do that, then do the second best thing. Chant the Ganga Stotram while the shower water is falling on your head. Why not? Water is also sacred. Water is also one of the five elements, and all those five elements are sacred. Earth, water, fire, air, space. None of them you cannot, you know, we just take these things for granted. We never see, you know, everything is divine. The earth, we are all sitting on it like this, and we think it's a nice flat earth sitting here, but the thing is a ball. And this ball is rotating, and this ball is revolving around the sun, and here we are nicely sitting. Huh? Look at that. I know, but look at the gravitational force. I was saying to somebody this morning, Newton only discovered it, but it was already there. Right? So look at that. So we take things for granted. And this earth that is doing so many things, the same earth, all the food that you cultivate on the earth, is from the earth. All the food that you cultivate comes from the earth. Whether it's vegetarian, non-vegetarian, whatever it is, it comes from the earth. Huh? And then and the same earth has, you can have a sour fruit and a sweet one. You can have a lemon and an apple tree growing the same thing. Look at that. You know, what an amazing thing. We take these things for granted. And look at fire. It has such a quality. My goodness, without that, what will you do? If without the element of fire in you, you will be frozen. But thank God for 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which Brahman maintains within you. So, isn't it? Fire, earth, water, water. Look at water. You know, everybody says, oh, we're like chemicals, H2O. Sure, I can do that. But and you just take this, as I said yesterday, you just take this Aquafina, whatever it is, and you drink it. But look at where it is coming from. The rainwater, if you didn't have that, you can't sustain the body. Earth, water, fire, air. You can't, there's no oxygen, you're finished. Space. If you don't have space, where will you exist? Okay. You can't, we take all this for granted. So everything is divine, 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 divine. So if you ask where is God, where is not God should be the question. So that's the idea. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.